This November 6th and 7th marked the 100th anniversary of the October Revolution, when the Bolsheviks, led by Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov, who was known as Lenin, seized power in a coup in St. Petersburg. In his new book, Lenin, the Man, the Dictator, the Master of Terror, journalist and author Victor Sebestyen examines the politics and personal life of the Soviet Union's first leader, drawing on details from Lenin's personal papers and recently declassified Soviet government archives. It's a portrait of a complex and ruthless dictator who laid the groundwork for Stalin. Lenin, the Man, the Dictator, the Master of Terror is published by Pantheon. I'm very pleased it has brought Victor Sebestyen to our show. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much for asking me. It's a great pleasure.
Now, how come November is the anniversary of the October Revolution?
Well, it's the difference between the Julian and the Gregorian calendars. One was there was a 12, 13-day difference between them.
In your introduction, you describe Lenin as the godfather of what commentators a century after his time describe as post-truth politics. In what way is Lenin a thoroughly modern political phenomenon?
Well, he'd be very recognizable today. He was a demagogue. He didn't operate entirely through terror at the beginning when he was trying to gain power. He promised people anything and everything. He lied unashamedly. He offered very, very simple solutions to complex problems. He identified people as those, scapegoated them as enemies of the people when things went later. He's a very identifiable figure in modern day democracies as well as in dictatorships.
Steve Bannon, President Trump's former chief strategist, has spoken admiringly of Lenin, saying, "Lenin wanted to destroy the state, and that's my goal too." Is that what Lenin actually set out to achieve?
Absolutely. He wanted to totally destroy not only the vestiges of Tsarism. The Tsar had already gone by the time Lenin took power. But then he wanted to destroy the liberals. The liberals and the bourgeois he hated even more than he hated the aristocracy. He wanted to break down everything and create anew. And that is what he did.
But did he really? Because many people have said the Soviet Union was just an alternate version of Tsarism.
Well, in some ways, yes. For example, the tools of repression were very similar. That's a mirror image in some ways. There was a kind of gulag. They sent people to Siberia in those days. But he was an absolutely committed socialist. He wanted to create that. And the scale of the ambition of the early communists was epic. They didn't just want to reorder a nation's economy or social life. They actually believed that if you got rid of the profit motive, if you got rid of private property, you'd create a different kind of human being. Their aim was almost religious. They believed you were going to create a perfect human being if you created different conditions, better conditions.
So he thought of himself as an idealist?
Most certainly he did. And therefore, anything and for people like that can be very, very dangerous, as we've seen many times since.
But you write that he was driven by emotion as much as by ideology. Why are
Yes.
some misconceptions about Lenin that you set out to what are some of them that the ones that you set out to correct in this book? Many people thought he was a lot more kindly or benign or whatever, than perhaps even more democratically inclined than Stalin, who replaced him.
Well, this has been an argument on the left for 80 years, 90 years, the explanation of what went wrong in the revolution and after the revolution. And the idea on a lot of the left was that Lenin was the idealist. Lenin was a kindly, democratic figure. Generations of school children were expected to refer to him as Dedushka, grandfather Lenin. He was benign. It's absolutely a misconception, totally. It was Lenin that created the institutions of terror.
I had even heard along those lines that when he was living in Zurich and lived across the street from the Cabaret Voltaire, where the Dadaists hung out, that he used to like to go over there. That is a kind of a humanizing image for Lenin. Well, I can't imagine the man that you are writing about here would have wanted to talk with the Dadaists.
Well, there are lots of I don't think they can. They're totally mutually exclusive. Actually, when you want to do I wanted to do about a biography of Lenin the man, not Lenin the idea. So he was a man who loved walking in mountains as much as he wanted to create revolution. He could identify hundreds of species of plants. I don't think that humanizing someone in that way, as long as you say, well, he also created the instruments of terror and created an ideology in which terrorism and murdering millions of people is justified for a greater end. I don't think somehow or other I'm trying to be soft on him in any way at all. I think it's interesting that he had these outer hinterland.
How did he come to become this person? Didn't he grow up in an upper middle class genteel family?
Yeah. There's nothing in his background and childhood that could have seemed to have made him one of history's greatest rebels. He was a very, very happy childhood. He didn't have these rages came from somewhere else, not from an unhappy background. Not like Stalin, who had a really miserable background and childhood. Lenin had a loving family. He got on well with his family throughout his life.
Wasn't he Jewish on his mother's side, which would make him Jewish?
Well, he didn't know that he was Jewish.
And that's something the Soviet government went to great lengths to conceal.
Absolutely. That was completely kept out of the fact that he was also a nobleman was kept out of the Soviet record. They lied unashamedly about who he actually was. The leader of the proletariat was definitely not a proletarian. But he didn't know that he was Jewish. He wouldn't have minded because he was a monster in many, many ways. But one thing he wasn't was an anti-Semite. So I don't think he'd have cared. He actually had high respect for Jews. His sister only discovered after Lenin was dead the whole story, and wrote a monograph about it. And she sent a letter to Stalin. It was Stalin personally who said, "Not a word of this to anyone. We're going to shut this out completely."
At what point did he start using the name Lenin instead of Ulyanov? Why Lenin?
Well, he actually used dozens, maybe even 100 possibly pseudonyms at one point. Sometimes he wrote articles, just one article under an assumed name. And no one really knows exactly why the name Lenin stuck, which he kept. Some people think it has something to do with the river Lena in Siberia, but there's no proof of that. That was the one he used 3 or 4 times, and then it just stuck. He had passports under 10 different aliases and pseudonyms. So why that one? His wife never really knew why. He never said why it was Lenin. No one seemed to exactly know. Anyway, if he wanted a river reference, the Volga would have been the one, because he loved going down the Volga. But someone had already nabbed Volgin, so he couldn't take that one.
I'm speaking with Victor Sebestyen, Sebestyen. His book, Lenin, The Man, The Dictator, and The Master of Terror, published by Pantheon. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Did he have any interest in politics when he was in school?
Absolutely none at all. He was, until he was radicalized almost overnight after his brother was executed for taking part in an attempt at the life of the Tsar Alexander III.
Was his brother? Did his brother actually attempt?
Oh yes, he did. He definitely did take part. He was guilty as charged.
So, do you think that Lenin would have become a revolutionary if his brother hadn't been executed by the state?
That's one of the what ifs, the hypotheticals. Mm. He might. What we know is that he'd read almost no politics until after he was 17. He loved Turgenev. He loved fiction. He wasn't at all interested. But after that, he was radicalized, not only because of the execution of a brother who was only 3 years older than him, but after that, his family was snubbed completely by the bourgeois liberal intelligentsia, the middle class in Russia. And he and that had an abiding hatred for the bourgeois and the do-gooding liberals until his dying day, almost to his last breath.
What happened to Lenin while he was at the University of Kazan?
Well, he was only allowed to stay there about 2 or 3 months before he was thrown out for taking part in a very minor way in a demonstration. They had it in for him. I mean, they didn't allow him into St. Petersburg University to begin with. So he was in a provincial university, and then they took any available opportunity to get rid of him.
You write that all of the most important relationships in his life were with women. Was he a feminist?
I think not in the modern sense at all. He was a Victorian man and thoroughly old fashioned in that sense. But he actually took women as seriously as he took men, and often that wasn't very seriously because he only took himself very seriously. But he certainly had respect for quite a lot of the women, and a lot of them were involved in the various different revolutionary groups.
His
mother, who he had a very very close relationship with his mother all the way through. And in fact, he wouldn't have been able to stay alive without his mother was giving him money until his mid-40s and keeping him in the revolutionary style to which he wished to be accustomed right through. And his two sisters were revolutionaries too, in and out of jail and in and out of exile. And his wife, he wouldn't have achieved half of what he did without his wife, who kept who's often is in biographies before has been written off as little more than a secretary or a household drudge, but there was much, much more to her than that. And he had in his later years in exile, he had a mistress in a curious and rather interesting ménage à trois. And she was very important to him politically. He was surrounded by women. He lived for 15 years with his mother-in-law in various lodging houses in European cities, and often just two, three pokey little rooms they shared, and his mother-in-law was always there. He was surrounded by women and got on with them well.
And his wife was okay with, his wife Nadezhda Krupskaya was okay with his having a mistress.
Grew to be, yes. Not only okay with it, this is a story that runs throughout a third or so of my book, because it was so central to Lenin's emotional life and political life. They actually became very very close friends in a very very interesting ménage à trois. An example. I'm not a great expert in this area, but it's one of the few examples, I think, of a love triangle in which all three behave in a civilized fashion. But Inessa and Nadia became very very close friends. Inessa died, had five children, none of them by Lenin, and she died before Lenin did. And it was the only time Lenin was seen to cry in public was at her funeral. And after Lenin died, she became guardians of Inessa's children, the two younger children, you know, and wrote letters to them saying, you know, addressed as my darling, darling daughter. And they had and after Lenin died, the three pictures until her life, the three pictures Nadia had on her desk were her mother, Lenin, and Inessa Amor.
I'm speaking with Victor Sebastian, who has been a British journalist and also the author of a number of books. The one we are discussing, his latest, is Lenin, the Man, the Dictator, and the Master of Terror, published by Pantheon. We will continue our conversation after this. We are back with Victor Sebastian. His latest book, Lenin, the Man, the Dictator, and the Master of Terror, published by Pantheon. Wasn't Lenin an attorney early in his career?
Yes, but and he hated the law, so that probably might have made him a quite a good. He loathed lawyers. He said lawyers were just there to interpret the bourgeois power.
So when did he start working as a journalist and also as a revolutionary agitator?
He was hardly ever a lawyer. I mean, he only did about seven or eight cases. He started involvement in radical politics and the radical groups while he was a lawyer in St. Petersburg. That's when he first joined.
But you point out that at this time in his life, he had made almost no personal contact with the working class in whose name that he proposed to lead a revolution. Why was he so fixated on the struggle of the proletariat if he had little contact with it?
Well, he was a convinced Marxist, and there was a big split in a bit of background.
But it's been pointed out that Marx would probably be horrified by what Lenin did in his name.
Absolutely, the first thing that would have horrified Marx was the idea that you could have a socialist communist revolution in a land full of peasants.
Germany, Britain, France,
industrialized state, because the advanced class that was going to create the revolution were the working class. And of course, in Russia, there was a very small working class. 85% of the population lived on the land and were peasants. So the first under the communists, one of the great crimes was to be a deviationist. Well, the first deviationist was Lenin, who stood Marxism on its head when it suited his grander purpose. And he said, no, of course you can have Russia is on the way towards a large working class, so we can avoid the bourgeois revolution. But again, Marx said you needed a period of bourgeois democracy, bourgeois rule, before you could mount a revolutionary insurrection. Well, Lenin said, no time for that. You know, we can do it now, straight away, which of course horrified more dogmatic, rigorous Marxists.
Lenin spent nearly half of his life outside of Russia. Why did he first leave at the age of 25?
Well, his great, what he really wanted to do and what his party wanted to do, they needed an organ of opinion. They needed a modern day Twitter. You know, they needed something that you could spread the word, and you couldn't do it inside Russia in conditions in Russia. You couldn't get a printing press organized, so you had to produce that outside Russia and try and smuggle as many copies as you could into Russia.
Why was he arrested soon after he returned to Russia in 1895? What were the reasons given for his arrest?
After he returned, he was arrested for a little while. Well, he was trying to bring in illegal literature. In Russia, you've got to remember that Russia at that time was not a nice liberal democracy. Hundreds of thousands of people were sent to Siberia just for reading the wrong books.
Dostoevsky for being at a party.
Exactly. I mean, I think, you know, some of the material I've been reading and looking at in the last couple of weeks because of the Mark Ingney centenary seems to suggest that, you know, he mounted a coup in a modern democracy, which is totally untrue. This is wasn't the condition inside Russia at that time.
You write that the arrest gave him the credentials required for a revolutionary. How long was he in prison, and then later in exile?
He was in prison for just over 18 months, and then was in exile for nearly 3 years. But exile, again, exile was still, you know, thousands of miles away from, you know, civilization. But he could have a servant, he could have guns, so he could go shooting. It was quite soft, and of course the conditions were much, much better than he would allow in for those in exile when the Soviet Union existed.
Well, you mentioned that Russia would not have been seen by Marx as an ideal country for communist revolution, but why did Marxism have a particularly strong appeal to Russian radicals?
Because, again, it was Because many of them, the intellectuals, wanted to be part of the West, and Marxism was a Western philosophy, it was a Western idea of change, whereas the other revolutionaries looked far more, and they said the revolution and form of socialism will come through the efforts of the peasantry, and that seemed very backward looking to the intellectuals. Russian intellectuals had no interest in the peasantry at all. So, and they thought that it was a lot of it was backward looking. The revolution they were looking to, they were trying to form alliances with some radicals inside the Orthodox Church. To the intellectual left intellectuals in Russia, this was not the way to go. This was not the way there was going to be a revolution.
So how did what did Lenin do to cause a split in the Revolutionary Party in Russia?
Well, he kept splitting the party in order to create a nucleus only around himself. This was how he organized. First of all, he was a brilliant organizer.
And you say a brilliant writer as well.
On his day, yeah. A lot of it was,
and he created his own style of argument, although he wasn't as eloquent, you say, as Marx or Trotsky.
Oh,
as
he wasn't
a writer.
As brilliant a writer as either of them. But he was incredibly muscular sometimes, and is very, very logical, albeit from sometimes a false premise. But he was, and when he wrote well, he could be very, very clear and direct, and inspirational. There were no frills in his writing. It was very functional. Some of it was very energetic. Some of the journalism he did at fast pace was really quite good.
How did the events of Bloody Sunday in 1905 drive Lenin's plans for revolution?
Well, this was a revolution, the 1905 revolution, which the Bolsheviks took almost no part in at all. It started with a demonstration for some workers' rights, led by a priest, and the Lenin's group, the Bolsheviks, and the Mensheviks, the socialist parties of the Marxist party.
They were the democratic socialists.
Yeah, the democratic socialists, not the socialist revolutionaries. but let's not go too far down here. They took almost no part. They were totally taken by surprise. They didn't expect. Lenin had wrote saying a revolution was going to come. It was going to be this type of revolution. But when it happened, he was totally unprepared for it. He was in Switzerland, and he didn't want to. He didn't want to get back to Russia very quickly. Unlike what happened 12 years later.
He was in exile in Switzerland when World War I broke out. Did he see the unpopularity of the war as an opportunity to spread Bolshevism in the Russian army?
Yes. And the war became, the war was one of the principal reasons there was a revolution. It was a disastrous war for the Russians. That they'd lost massive amounts of territory. They lost far more men. Like World War II, they lost far more men at arms than any of the other combatant nations. And it was an incredibly unpopular war, and there were massive mutinies of the soldiers. And that was one of the main reasons for the... He spread it. He wanted Russia to lose the war.
And so he returned to St. Petersburg, and there have been many paintings showing him heroically entering the city. Hmm.
The Finland station arrived from that sealed train. The whole story of the Germans paying for him to the enemy paying for him to get back to Russia. Yeah, that was the only way he could get to Russia. He had to do a deal with the Germans and their money as well.
And the Germans hoped that he would take Russia out of the war, which he did.
Absolutely, it was a reasonable tactic of the Germans.
You write from the first few hours, from his first few hours as leader of Russia, he laid the ground for rule by terror. So how was Leninism different from Tsarism? Didn't both rely on systemic violence, censorship, authoritarianism, and a police state? How was this part of the revolutionary ideal?
Well, it wasn't part of the ideal. It was revolutionary practice. How it differed is that they were the economic, what they were changing was absolutely fundamental. the Tsar just wanted to do to keep power. And indeed, as did Lenin. But what he was trying to do were fundamental changes, and there were challenges to him. But he knew that you couldn't. He said that you, from day one, how can you possibly make a revolution without firing squads? How are you going to change humankind without the firing squads? Because people had an annoying disposition, as it annoyed him, that they're refusing to be perfected. So it required coercion. It required bullying. And in the end, it required mass terror.
So on the second day of his reign, Lenin began to censor the press. And a few weeks later, he set up the first Soviet police organization, the Cheka. That phrase is still used. Yeah. Putin is described as a Czechist.
Putin called himself a Czechist, and he was. He was head of the, he was head of the successor of the Cheka.
Wasn't Cheka modeled on the Tsar's police state?
It was modeled on them, but it was far more ruthless, far more effective, far more channeled directly politically to Lenin's cause.
And he abolished Russia's legal system. What did he replace it with?
Revolutionary justice.
What does that mean?
Well, that was modeled very much on the French some of the ideas of the French Revolution. You had tribunals. You didn't have judges. You had tribunals of two members of the party and one person they picked up off the street, who would then. That was revolutionary justice. You dispensed basically with lawyers. It was party officials and members of the public.
He only ruled for less than 7 years, but he had a number of crises. How did he address the food and grain shortages that plagued Russia in 1918? And then how did he react in 1921 when sailors revolted at the Kronstadt naval base?
Well, there was starvation pretty soon after the revolution. There'd been starvation in the war, but they opened up the granaries. They could never get a distribution network. That's the main problem in a vast country like Russia. So he just went in and stole and took the grain from peasants, and took the seeds, so they couldn't plant for the next year, and that led to even greater starvation. It was always his method of ruling on the land was always compulsion.
Did he give his blessing for Stalin to be his successor? He called Stalin
He created Stalin. For all those who say, "Well, it all went wrong under Stalin," well, who was it that built Stalin up, made him head of the Communist Party, gave him enormous powers of patronage? He may, at the end, very end, when he was on his deathbed, have said, "Well, we shouldn't have. Stalin is too rough, too rude, too autocratic." But he'd spent the last 15 years building the man up.
And then his body was embalmed. He was given the equivalent of sainthood,
secular saint. It's macabre, isn't it? There are not very many historical figures, those who have actually changed the world, you can actually still see in this bizarre way. And that was one of the reasons he's always interested me.
In your conclusion, you write, Lenin is being used by a new breed of autocrats, extreme nationalists who may have dispensed with communism, but nevertheless respect Lenin as a strong man in the Russian tradition. How do we see Leninism play out in politics today? And you have to tell me very quickly because we're pretty much out of time.
Well, in Russia, Putin sees him himself in this tradition of strong leadership, the Vorst. That's what Russia needs now. Russia always needs, according to the nationalists around.
So he would ally himself more with Lenin than with Stalin.
No, much more with. No, I was going to come on to it. Stalin he could package as a nationalist figure. But Lenin is a bit more problematic because of the communism, but he still could see him as in this continuum of autocratic leadership.
Victor Sebastian will appear at Book Culture at 450 Columbus Avenue at 82nd Street tonight at 7 p.m. His book, Lenin, is published by Pantheon. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thank you very much for asking me. I enjoyed myself.